When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Ryer, joined by my great friend and longtime college football analyst, Mr. Brent Beard. Brent, of course, also a voter for the most prestigious individual honor in all of collegiate athletics, the Heisman Trophy. And Brent, it feels a little bit like Groundhog Day because we're back here on the channel. And we've got a dismissal of an SEC head coach to kind of lead us into a Week 10 preview. This time it is Brian Kelly out after a disastrous second half. It's kind of hard to get your head around the fact that LSU actually led that game against Texas A&M. But boy, with the way that landslide kind of went there in the third and fourth quarter at Death Valley it was empty for the most part, but the fans that did hang around last Saturday night voiced their displeasure, to say the least.
Yeah, the booing was loud and long, wasn't it, Travis? And look, we're in the time of year, and if people are kind of saying, well, is this coaching stuff a little earlier than normal? Well, the truth of the matter is it is. This is usually going on more in November than it is in October, but it really is amazing, isn't it, Trav, that we are not even at Halloween yet, and we have got a lot of stuff that is looking at us the wrong way, even meaning coaches getting fired. Brian Kelly, 34-14, 19-10 in the SEC, but after that bad second half against Texas A&M, the LSU brain trust had enough, hadn't they?
You got the Gubna over there in Louisiana involved. You know what that takes me back to? That takes me back to SMU, the mid-'80s, where you had the governor of Texas intertwined into some stuff that was going on with the SMU program all those years ago. But yeah, it is interesting from the interim perspective because we got three SEC programs now that are going to have interim head coaches for at least four games.
Yes.
And typically, to your point, you get into mid-November, late November, you're going to go ahead and make that change. You'll see maybe a change made going into the final regular season game. And look at Florida for that. I mean, Florida's last four regimes – have ended with interim head coaches. Now, I think Randy Shannon back in 2017 with McElwain going away there, that was an extended situation maybe for the Gators. But absolutely, it's a elongated interim status for Frank Wilson and Bobby Petrino. And as we're going to see this Saturday with the Florida Gators taking on the Georgia Bulldogs and Billy Gonzalez. But what seemed to be the tipping point, in your opinion, with Kelly? Was it just readily apparent that he just wasn't going to meet the standards that LSU has for that program? Was it a cultural misfit? Was it maybe a kind of a gumbo, I guess you could say, of a variety of different things?
Yeah, it was. And certainly losing, what, Trav, three games again before Halloween certainly did not help by any situation at all. And listen, the amazing thing is they were ahead a lot of that first half, and Trav, they were really not in the game at all in the second half. So I think that surprised a lot of people, frankly. And look, there's a chance we're not even done when you throw Kentucky and Auburn in the mix, right? So it has been an incredible month, to say the least, in the SEC.
It really has, unprecedented in some ways. And to your point, who knows what we're going to see at a couple other places. Roughly half the league could be impacted by movement at the head coach position. And then the residual effects of that, the domino effect of that, because you've got programs looking for coaches within the SEC that, you know, are eyeballing head coaches at other programs currently in the SEC. So if Lane Kiffin's on the move, that's going to create an Ole Miss opening. If Eli Drinkwitz ends up moving on for Penn State or one of the jobs in the Southeastern Conference, you're going to have a situation there at Mizzou. So you're right. It feels like we're just getting started. You know what we're just getting started with, too, is week 10 in the Southeastern Conference coming up. It is, I wouldn't say an abbreviated slate, certainly not a full slate. You've got a number of teams on the bye week, including LSU. That's three for three, too, right? You had three of those teams go into a bye week in Florida, LSU and Arkansas, and that's when they made their moves, whether it was the early bye week or the later one. But we do have some interesting action on Saturday, November the 1st. That noon window Eastern isn't going to disappoint.
No.
It's been a really, really good spot for the Southeastern Conference so far this season. That doesn't look to change with number 9 Vanderbilt traveling to Austin to take on the Texas Longhorns. A lot of questions about Arch Manning and his availability following Texas's improbable 17-point fourth quarter comeback at Mississippi State last Saturday night. I saw that the student athlete availability report is out now on this Wednesday night as we're live, and official designation on Wednesday for Arch Manning, Brent, questionable as he works through concussion protocol.
Yeah, I saw that. That was quite interesting to say the least. He certainly is not out, so that's encouraging for Texas fans. But look, there's a couple of things here. Number one, Vandy at Texas, you could argue, is the headliner of the day. It's a noon game, but this Vanderbilt team is for real. This is not our fathers and our grandfathers, or even when you and I grew up, Vanderbilt team. Now, Missouri almost beat Vandy with the ball. I don't know if it was even the one. Trav is maybe closer to the goal line on that final pass for Missouri with Matt Zollers coming off the bench and playing well. But look, Vandy, they weren't great, but their defense was solid. They kept Missouri in difficult situation, 5 of 16 on third down. Now, Ahmad Hardy almost had 100 yards, which is something that he struggled with. But still, Diego Pavia playing well. Vandy got more breaks. And man alive, the Commodores' dream season continues, doesn't it?
It does. And this is a team, you get the sense, Brent, isn't going to have a bit of backup in it when it goes into Austin this week. They've already been to Blacksburg. They've already been to South Carolina. They've already been to Alabama, where they didn't have as much success as they would like, but they were certainly very competitive over four quarters against the homestanding Crimson Tide. So I like Vanderbilt in this game. I know Texas is a 2.5-point favorite. I will say this. I thought Arch Manning showed continued growth prior to that injury against Mississippi State. He looked a lot more like the guy that probably unfairly a lot of people thought he was going to look like against Ohio State on the road in an opener. And give Matthew Caldwell a lot of credit for Texas, too. If he needs to go, he came up big in overtime with Manning sidelined with that touchdown pass. And, oh, by the way, Ryan Niblett is pretty good at returning punts for Texas. And Vanderbilt averages like 47 yards per punt, so they punt the ball very well. The tough thing is getting Vanderbilt to punt. You know, Vanderbilt, to this point in the season, hasn't hit 20 punts on the season. So their punter doesn't qualify in the individual stats because he doesn't have enough punts. Vanderbilt does a really good job, I guess is what I'm saying, when they get into some third and fourth down situations offensively.
Well, what a That's a great situation. Now, a couple of things to think about. I think one group that's been consistent with Texas has been the defense. The defense gave up 94 yards rushing in the first half against Mississippi State. And my goodness, Trev, in the second half, Texas defense held State to minus 31 yards on 18 carries.
Yeah.
And then, what was it, 7 sacks and 9 tackles for a loss? You can win a lot of games doing that, can't you?
Yeah, I finished that overtime with a sack of Blake Shapen and forcing a fumble there. I think for Texas, there were a lot of positives offensively. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as much in the run game, but no. Wingo, explosive in the passing game, working with Arch Manning. And, you know, we talk about explosiveness in this game. One of the undervalued players probably going into this is Vanderbilt running back MK Young. He had another long touchdown run against Mizzou last week. MK Young only has 31 carries in eight games, Brent, but he's averaging 12.3 yards per carry.
Oh, Lord.
And of his 31 carries to this point, 5 have gone for touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, MK Young – New Mexico State transfer. So throw him on that pile with Tim Beck and Diego Pavia, Eli Stowers. Boy, I mean, just a axis shifting migration by those Aggies from New Mexico State a couple of years ago. What do you think this comes down to for Vanderbilt? Is it as simple as saying, look, these two quarterbacks are going to decide this game. Mm-hmm. Maybe Texas with that return game. What are you thinking here? Who is the more complete football team, maybe, in your opinion?
Look, I'm not sure Vanderbilt is not the most complete football team. Listen, this stat is – I thought it was a typo at first. Trev, Vandy wins. Missouri ran 78 plays and Vanderbilt 45.
Yeah.
For Trev, how many games, I love to feed this into a supercomputer and find this out. How many teams have won an SEC game with 45 snaps? That's unheard of, isn't it?
That's really hard to do. And it tells you how much the Vanderbilt defense was out there in that game. But they have that sort of stuff, I guess, whatever it is. And it all starts with the quarterback.
No doubt. And
it all goes back. They had nothing. When A.J. Swan was taking snaps at Vanderbilt a couple, 3 years ago,
right?
That wasn't what Vanderbilt was about. It all goes back to the quarterback. But across the board, I do agree. I think right now, if you ask me the more complete football team, it'd be tough for me not to go with Vanderbilt. Yeah. And I just don't think, you know, they may lose this game. But, you know, Texas is 3-1 in the league and feels like they're 1-3.
Yeah,
because of the last couple of weeks. But you know what? Texas still has everything right in front of them. Vandy this week, Georgia coming up, and then Texas A&M. Now, when you talk about those three games and the way Texas has played for the vast majority of the season, that may not be a good thing for Texas. But the point is, with everything that's happened to this point, if Arch can be healthy and stay healthy, they still have a chance to accomplish pretty much everything they set out to do.
Well, they absolutely do. This is why this is a humongous game. But I'm looking at that Vanderbilt schedule right now, Travis. Texas, Auburn, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
It's navigable, but it's not easy either. I don't think Saturday's going to be easy.
No.
Because you worry the longer you let Texas kind of get it figured out, eventually Texas is going to get it figured out. And as you head into November, you would think that might be when it happens for Steve Sarkisian's team. Also on Saturday, 3:30, we talked about it. We got an interim status. We got a couple of three now on just about a weekly basis as the Florida Gators will take on the Georgia Bulldogs in the cocktail party right there at Everbank Stadium on the banks of the St. John's River. Georgia, just a 7.5-point favorite. I think some people may be surprised by that, but I talked about this earlier today on the channel. Really, if you go player for player on the rosters, this is about as close as Florida's probably been to Georgia in a while. And I don't say that as kind of a implication that Florida has really upgraded the roster. I think they have. I think they have. But I also don't think Georgia roster-wise is maybe where it's been on a consistent basis. Now, the problem for Florida is you still got injuries. Now, once you start taking into account the guys that are going to be out Saturday, Vernell Brown, the third, out. Aiden Mizell, out. Aaron Gates, the DB, out. Jacoby Jackson, one of the top two running backs for this team, out. Caleb Banks, a future NFL defensive lineman, out. That's where it gets problematic for Florida. Yeah. Do you think, though, that this Gator offense might show some spark and some signs of life now that the call sheet has been pried away from Billy Napier?
Look, I think if Lagway is ready to play and he won't be limited either by the coaches or by his being overweight, I think he could play well. Look, Jayden Baugh has been a workhorse the whole year and has played very well. Sturdivant, a wide receiver, is okay too. I think the disappointing thing for Florida, and Trav, help me on this, they thought this offensive line would be a strength for them, correct?
Absolutely.
And it's been basically, I don't know if you'd call it a strength, but they have struggled at times. Florida's only won one of the previous eight games. The Georgia staff and Kirby have owned this series as of late. But look, I mean, even last year, you remember Lagway getting hurt. And I mean, this was a trap. This is a one score game. Mm-hmm. What, mid fourth quarter or deeper? But I mean, obviously, Georgia, we think, is the better team here. But yes, that's going to be interesting to see. If the play calling shows some improvement for the Gators Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, big absence for Georgia offensively Saturday is Colby Young.
Yes.
Big wide receiver, talented guy, physical guy, is out for the Georgia Bulldogs. So something to keep an eye on. Georgia pretty good depth at the wide receiver position, but I'd say Young has got the potential to be really special. I think for Florida, it becomes, as you said, level of engagement. And even if they come out sort of enthused, like you typically see in some of these interim situations, teams the week after or whatever a coach is replaced, you see them really bring it early in a game. But then by the middle to end of the second quarter, they can't really sustain it. And also, Lagway, can he take care of the football?
Yeah.
You know, that can't happen for Florida this week, to turn the football over and expect to beat this Georgia team. Hey, let's keep it moving here on Second Helping, Brent, as we look ahead to the 4 o'clock game on Saturday. Another one of those situations in Fayetteville, Arkansas. We had one last week with Auburn paying a visit to Northwest Arkansas. Now we'll do it again with Mississippi State. Somebody has to win an SEC game in this matchup. To this point, Mississippi State without an SEC win. Arkansas without an SEC win. Auburn got its first SEC win at Arkansas last week. Someone's going to get one this Saturday at Reynolds Razorback Stadium. Do you have a good feel as to which of these teams that might be, Brent?
Well, I still think, you know, listen, when you think about it, Trav, how many near wins has Mississippi State had against some of the better teams in the league?
At least three. I mean, Tennessee, Florida.
Yeah.
Well, in Texas.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's three right there.
Oh, yeah. And what brings some intrigue here is, will Ashton Daniels be the quarterback at Auburn? I know they've shifted things around a little bit and probably did so. But look, now I would say Auburn's defense probably won that Arkansas game in a lot of ways. But again, you've got – look, State, I think, is going to be okay. If they get a couple wins under their belt, that would help them. Auburn still, Trav, I mean, they could lose this game. And they could certainly lose against Vanderbilt and Alabama. And the executioner, shall we say, that has been put on hold at Auburn for a little bit and some other SEC schools. But I think what's going to be interesting here is particularly for Auburn, if they end up in a 7-5, 6-6, will this Auburn coaching staff be like a lot of the rest of them in the SEC, and they're looking for employment too?
Yeah, we're going to get to Auburn here in a little bit with that matchup with Kentucky. But, you know, this is a tough game with State and Arkansas to really feel comfortable about a pick either way. I've said it before, Talen Green is a guy that is so tantalizing in terms of his playmaking ability and the different things he can do with his arm and his legs. But, you know, the home stretch of that matchup with Auburn last week sort of underscored once again that Talen Green, yeah, he can give it, but Talen Green can seriously take away. And, you know, we start thinking about the coaching carousel, obviously, in relation to Arkansas, because when LSU comes open and other jobs start to come open, we know that pushes Arkansas down in the pecking order. What does that mean for Bobby Petrino as a potential long-term solution? Sure. You know, that's still on the table. Petrino's got to get some wins here, though, down the stretch. Yeah, I'm not saying he's got to win everyone, but he can't go 0-4 in the interim role and realistically think, oh, yeah, we'll just keep riding with that. And I've been a proponent of Petrino becoming more of the permanent solution there. But, you know, even though the losses have been very competitive, last week, relative to the A&M loss the week before, or the Tennessee loss on the road, last week was especially disappointing because you had a winless SEC opponent on your home field. You took a little bit of a punch early from Auburn, responded well there, but then you just didn't have any type of finish. I think Mississippi State, it's a conflicted fan base right now with Jeff Levy because – there is no question Mississippi State has improved. Its roster has improved in this last season or during this season. Guys like Brennan Thompson, Booth as a second back to go with Fluff Bothwell. You know, Shapen being able to stay healthy for the most part has been a good thing. Defensively, I think they've improved leaps and bounds. They had to. They were so bad a year ago on that side of the ball. But the bottom line in the Southeastern Conference is wins. And Levy, I don't think he's in danger in any way, but boy, it just seems harder and harder to get wins the more and more you let them slip through your fingers. Also on Saturday, 7 o'clock on ESPN, Lane Kiffin gets a night game at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. Yes. What about that, Brent?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think he's been looking for one and been real happy about it. Of course, the reality is the off the field stuff for Lane has kind of carried the day, and he's got multiple suitors who are looking after him at this point too. So, that's going to be very interesting. Trav, what does South Carolina have in the tank after a difficult loss? They're 8 points ahead of Alabama. In the middle of the fourth quarter, the Tide comes back and scores two touchdowns to win the game. I'm just wondering how difficult it will be for them to get up for this game, and could Ole Miss get ahead and never look back?
Yeah, that's going to be the big question, and it starts with Lenore Sellers because obviously he had the big turnover there in the final minute and a half or so of that loss to the Alabama Crimson Tide. And I give the South Carolina staff a lot of credit. It felt like they had that team really ready to go, especially coming off a disappointing performance at home the previous week against Oklahoma. I thought South Carolina's front defensively gave Alabama a lot of problems. Alabama could not run the football. And that's where it's going to start this week for South Carolina if they're going to have a chance in this game. Yeah. They've got to take care of Kewon Lacy and that part of this offense. Trinidad Chambliss and how he can use his legs. That's where it actually has to start for South Carolina, because that kind of is their strength as a football team right now. And I think, you know, for Ole Miss, you watched them beat Oklahoma last week on the road and you think, you know what, I think I'm ready to trust Ole Miss. But then you think back to last year when Ole Miss beat Georgia and then lost to Florida, you know, a 500 at the time type of Florida team. You saw Ole Miss last year at home lose to Kentucky. I think we're just about far enough removed from those type of disappointments to feel like, hey, Ole Miss is set up right now to be a part of the 12-team playoff field. And perhaps, depending on how some things go in the season's regular season's final month, maybe we see Ole Miss in Atlanta for that SEC championship game.
Well, what Travis is talking about is the remaining schedule for Ole Miss, South Carolina, the Citadel, Florida, and Mississippi State.
Yep.
So, Trav, I don't see many L's in that. Do you?
No, I don't really see any starting with this week and hosting South Carolina. Interesting, Ole Miss, a 12.5-point favorite. I believe Alabama was a 12.5 last week against the Gamecocks. And it was white knuckle time.
Sure was.
At Williams-Brice for the Crimson Tide, who got out of there with the W. Also in primetime on Saturday night, really like this game, Brent. Number 18, Oklahoma at number 14, Tennessee. The Vols bounce back, especially offensively, in very impressive fashion in that hammering of rival Kentucky last Saturday night at Kroger Field. Defense got involved with a touchdown. Joey Aguilar, you wondered a little bit about how he would be feeling after that Alabama performance physically. Didn't look like he was any worse for wear. Brazel, Matthews, Staley.
Yeah.
They've got those weapons on the outside. And defensively, Tennessee isn't what they were last year. I don't think anybody would argue otherwise, because they were, by Tennessee standards of late, pretty loaded. But still good enough to rebound the way I'm sure Josh Heupel would have liked.
Trev, is this, for all intents and purposes, an elimination game?
It's already I've already called it a playoff game. I think we're already getting into the playoffs.
I agree.
If you want to look at it that way, this is like a, you know, an early November playoff game, Brent.
Really is. I mean, and what Travis is talking about is with both teams having two losses in the SEC, Trav, a third loss would basically probably put you in the Citrus Bowl or something like that, instead of the SEC championship game. Certainly interesting game. John Mateer for Oklahoma, as he still recovers from his injuries, Joey Aguilar. So it's going to be, should be a fun quarterback matchup. But as you said, a real opportunity for the winner to stay in it in what could be a very difficult year for the loser.
It could. And you wonder, for Tennessee, we talk about it with Ole Miss in that run game. For Tennessee, the run game this week.
Yes.
With Star Thomas and Deshaun Bishop going against that Oklahoma defense. And, you know, also, can Oklahoma run it enough? Mm-hmm. Got some explosiveness last week in the run game from Xavier Robinson. 9 carries, but 109 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had a couple of big-time runs. Isaiah Satania, I like him a lot at the wide receiver position for Oklahoma. Kind of reminds me of KC Concepcion.
Yes.
From Texas A&M, because they both get it done as receivers and in the return game. Satania against Ole Miss last week, 6 catches, 131 yards and a touchdown. I think he also, though, had a pretty big fumble on a punt return. So got to do a little better job of taking care of the football. But for Oklahoma, again, it kind of goes back to me offensively. Can they keep it all off of John Mateer? Yeah. Can they get enough out of Robinson and those backs and a receiver or two other than Satania to give them some balance? It's a fun matchup because, you know, Josh Heupel's an offensive guy. You know, Brent Venables is a defensive guy. And it should be an extremely, extremely hard-hitting affair. Both these teams are very aggressive mm-hmm. in how they play defense, and they take a lot of pride in being very physical and violent at the point of attack.
Yeah, it will be extremely interesting to see who can recover quickly. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we're not saying the season should be over for the loser shortly after Halloween, but they will certainly be behind the eight ball and will be struggling after losing this game.
Yeah, I just look at the 3-3 loss teams a year ago that yes. were on the outside looking in. Alabama, South Carolina, Ole Miss. Now, every year's different. You know, maybe 9-3, the right kind of 9-3 gets you in this year. But I think we learned a year ago, you don't really want to be on that side of the fence, if at all, if you can help it at all. So I like Tennessee in the game. I think they're going to get the job done. I think it's going to do wonders for Tennessee to get back home.
Mm-hmm.
Road game, tough road game at Alabama, on the road again last week, get back home to take on the Oklahoma Sooners. Should be a lot of fun there at Neyland Stadium in primetime. Speaking of the Kentucky Wildcats, they take to the road to take on the Auburn Tigers. Auburn, a 10.5-point favorite after that first SEC win of the season last Saturday at Arkansas. This game set for SEC Network. What do you think about that quarterback situation, Brent? I know Hugh is trying to keep that thing, and understandably so,
yeah,
competitive advantages and whatnot. But can you envision a scenario where Ashton Daniels doesn't start this week after what we saw in the second half in Fayetteville?
No. And look, he wasn't great. But I mean, Arnold was 7 of 12, 73 yards, threw a pick. And he also rushed a little bit, but Daniels 6 of 8, 77. He didn't throw a touchdown, but Travy didn't throw a pick.
Yeah,
and I thought that was important with this game too. But again, a little bit of a reprieve for Hugh Freeze. But man, oh man, Trav, and they should win this game with it being at home, and Kentucky continues to struggle. Although they do have some highlights themselves. I mean, scored 34 on Tennessee, so I give him credit mm-hmm. for that. Poor defense versus the Vols. Frankly, Cutter Bowley, a school record, man alive, 5 touchdown passes in one game, 330 yards. So I give him a lot of credit for that. But overall, I mean, unless Auburn gets blindsided somehow, I think they're able to win this game, but there's still a rough season coming for Auburn.
Yeah, you could hear it from Josh Heupel in the post game Saturday night. He was not happy with his defense.
No.
And Tim Banks is usually a guy that, as a coordinator for that Tennessee defense, it's going to be a lot harder than it was, or it seemed like at times. Kendrick Law, the Alabama transfer for Kentucky, had a big game. It just seemed like explosives were there for him just about whenever he wanted or needed them. Is it an inevitability at this point, in your opinion, with Mark Stoops? Are we sort of unofficially coming down the home stretch, so to speak, to use, I guess, the horses as an analogy, his tenure, his largely successful tenure there at the University of Kentucky?
And Trav, could, to a degree, can we say that for both these coaches going into this game a little bit?
I think John Cohen wants to keep Pugh. I think he does. I mean, he hired him.
Yeah, he did. He did.
And I think that was part of the letting the officials have it on the field
probably
after the Georgia game.
Yeah.
That's what it smelled like kind of to me. Like, oh, wow, Cohen is ready to to go tooth and nail for his guy, yeah, regardless of what happens. And it's not really about Hugh. It's about how we keep falling victim to this poor officiating. And
yeah. You know, oh yeah.
That's what it, part of it felt like to me. I think Cohen would love to be able to keep Hugh Freeze. Now, if last Saturday ends up being Hugh's only SEC win of the season, mm-hmm, and he goes 0 for November, I don't know how you do it.
I don't either. I agree. But, and also to your point, Trav, here's my thing. On a normal year to where we don't have a lot of firings, does Kentucky go ahead and pull the trigger? And my point is, with almost every week more SEC coaches being fired,
yeah,
and needing to hire them, I mean, is that a bonus in some ways for Stoops? That, I mean, could they be thinking, well, you know, we could go another year with this and hoping that it's going to be better and we won't have to deal with that many coaches being out of the SEC? That would have to be a pretty difficult decision, would it?
Well, let's say you move on from Stoops. It's made on the UK end to go ahead, yeah, and do that. And I'm not convinced that's what UK will want to do.
Yes.
What if they do? Is John Summerall a slam dunk to come home?
Well,
from Tulane.
That's
what I would need to know before, yes, I made a change like that or initiated change on the university side of things. I would want an assurance from Summerall or a coach that I hold in that type of esteem.
Yes.
Before I move on from what I got right now. I think, you know, within the next couple of years, you're going to be making a change regardless.
Oh yeah.
You don't want to make a Chad Morris type, yeah, of change either.
No. That's my point to this. Do they get to where the coaches that they were interested in are gone off the pecking order and they're down to a coordinator? And I'm not saying they can't hire a good coordinator at this point either. But I mean, the more these SEC coaches are fired, to me, it seems like the more likely that some of the schools down the pecking order may end up with a coordinator.
And they may end up in Coordinatorville,
yeah,
if they move on. And I outlined some coordinators earlier today on the channel. Ryan Grubb of Alabama.
Yep.
Kirby Moore of Missouri.
Yes.
Blake Baker before the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got young guys like Charlie Weiss Jr. Mm-hmm. What about Tim Beck of Vanderbilt?
Yeah, sure.
DJ Durkin of Auburn as a defensive, mm-hmm, coordinator. Is he far enough removed from the Maryland tragedy?
Yeah.
Will he ever be far enough removed,
really,
from that?
Really?
Although we seem to have given Brian Kelly a pass on a similar situation there at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
What about a Colin Klein at, yeah, Texas A&M? What about, yeah, Joey Halsey?
Mm-hmm.
For that matter, what about another former Tennessee offensive coordinator, Alex Golish, maybe a South Florida. That's what you're looking, mm-hmm, at, mm-hmm, if you're Kentucky. I agree, though, with the premise that there's no guarantee unless you get one.
Yeah,
absolutely. Before you make a move that you end up feeling really good about. Well, Brent, that is the lineup for Saturday. As we said, we've got a handful of teams on that bye week, most notably the two conference leaders.
Yeah.
Texas A&M and Alabama get to catch their breath, mm-hmm, going into the month of November. And I think certainly from the Alabama perspective, they're going to need it because,
yeah, oh, yeah,
jump back in, even against an LSU team that's in interim mode now in terms of players. Now, there is that concern, as we talked about with Florida, level of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are guys already thinking, you know what, I'm hitting the portal after this season, I'm not going to be here with the coaching change.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to hit the market either for the first time, second, mm-hmm, time, or third time.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things you can't really account for. You don't really know until you see these teams on the field. That's why I think we might get a little preview of LSU and that trip to Tuscaloosa a week from now, from Florida this week against Georgia.
Yeah.
And kind of,
yeah,
what does Florida's interest level look, mm-hmm, like against the Dogs? You wouldn't, yeah, think it would be a problem because it's Georgia and it's a big stage, mm-hmm, and guys love that. But you still wonder sometimes.
Well, and kudos to Alabama for beating South Carolina. Trev, I'm not sure they win that game last year. Do you?
No, I don't think they do. I mean, I saw them lose that game last year. I saw them lose that game a couple of times.
Yeah, really?
Last year, you know? So it was falling right in line with the double-digit road favorite loss to an unranked opponent. It was happening in real time again. Yeah. And then it didn't, you know, guys made plays and Alabama didn't panic either, you know, because that drive to go down and just have an opportunity to tie it. That was a 7.5, 8 minute drive in the fourth quarter.
Absolutely.
And it got to the point with under 3 minutes left where you're thinking that this is it. You know, they got to tie the game here because they didn't go tempo. They were very deliberate and pretty assured of themselves. And, you know, Ryan Grubb drew it up and they got the job done. So you're right. Give them credit. Defense got it done on the ensuing possession. And what did you think of Beamer's decision not to tackle Jeremy Bernard there at about the 15-yard line and let him go ahead and score with less than 35 seconds left, and it makes it a touchdown game for Alabama?
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. And, Trav, he could have – there was a lot of talk about Beamer could have gone for two at some point and had a 9-point lead on Alabama instead of an 8-point lead. I'm not sure how many coaches would have gone for two in a situation like that, but it was certainly a big win for the Tide, and really recovering a fumble, scoring 14 points. I mean, Trev, that was an 8-point lead with 8 minutes and change. There wasn't a lot of time left.
No, and that's what I mean. They went on the drive really when they got the football at that point and took the rest of the fourth quarter just about. They left enough time for their defense to go out and force a turnover to put them in position to go ahead and not even need overtime to win the game. Now, you know, we talk about Beamer and the 2-point stuff, like not going to make it 9. Well, earlier in a 14-12 game, he chased a little bit.
He did
early to try to tie the game at 14-14. You know, if he kicks that extra point,
that's a good point.
You know, you're up 9.
Yeah.
But look, you can play that game all day long. How the game moves with that type of situation versus a 1-score, you don't know.
No,
you know, it's kind of a fool's game, but we still like to do it. We still like to talk about it. So it makes it fun.
It does. And let me finish with a couple of things real quick.
Yep.
Missouri's off. Boy, really, really so difficult losing Bo Pribula, who is having such a really good year. But I tell you, they put Matt Zollers in, and I thought he did a really nice job. Golly, Missouri's got A&M next week. Oof. And we haven't talked a lot about A&M, but Trav, I can almost say, I don't want to say quietly, but in some ways, I mean, 8-0, first time since 92, 5-0 in SEC, playing back-to-back seasons, most points scored at LSU in program history. This A&M team, Trav, particularly offensively with these wide receivers, what they've got at quarterback. I'm curious, just a thought or two on an A&M team that's off that looks like they could be undefeated going to Atlanta.
No, they've been they're tested under fire too. I mean, that win at Notre Dame earlier advanced them as a team. They're physical on both lines of scrimmage. I've said it here that they don't really have that star power.
Yeah.
They're more about the collection, but they do. Cassius Howell has become a star for that Texas A&M defense. Marcel Reed is becoming a star. Now, still worry about Reed some as far as turning the ball over on occasion, but they have depth at the running back position, which they utilize. They're kind of a 180 from Alabama. You know, those two teams are undefeated, but it's interesting because they've kind of done it different ways. I think you have a little more trust in A&M defensively and A&M's run game, whereas Alabama has been very much quarterback-centric, which you sort of anticipate with a Kalen DeBoer team. Hasn't always been consistently good down in and down out defensively, but been very opportunistic, and also on the other side has done a great job of taking care of the football. So it's fascinating. It's the old, you know, you can get it done different ways. And I think both these teams are prime examples of that. And A&M's complete, looking more and more complete too. And as you said, KC Concepcion, Terry Bussey, mm-hmm. they got playmakers. They're not just a wrecking crew defense and a grinded out offense. They are explosive on offense too.
And quickly, how impressed are you with Elko and what he has done? Did well at Duke. Won 9 games. Is going to A&M and really built this team in his image mm-hmm. somewhat this year. Man alive. People start naming teams who are really doing well in the league, and somehow they forget about A&M. I guess that tells you something, but what a job that Elko has done.
You think about some of the best coaches to ever do it, and you think about their second years.
Yeah, yes.
The success they had in year two.
Nick Saban.
Saban at Alabama. That's, you know, Urban at Florida. That's basically what Elko was doing at Texas A&M this year. Now there's still football to be played. We'll see. Yes. But they're not built in a way where it looks like they could run into the wall here coming up. They are built in a way that looks really good if you get into a playoff or you go to Atlanta and then you got to go into a playoff and win 3 games or something like that. They look like they're built pretty well for that.
Yeah, they are. Good. Trav, good job. But tonight, my friend, I always enjoy talking some SEC ball and man alive. As tough as this is this year, you had a 9th game next year.
It already feels like 9.
It does. hey, Trav, are those ABC executives, are they just laughing out loud and counting the money from noon to midnight on Saturday?
You know, the television ratings look like 9 game schedule, don't they?
They really do, don't they?
Well, you know, the Big Ten's already got 9 games.
Yeah.
And they're getting hammered by the SEC with the eyeballs on a weekly basis. So, yeah, I think ESPN's going to like that real good too.
Yes.
When it goes to 9 game, even if there is an extra kicker that has to come into play. Well, Brent, as always, a lot of fun, my friend. Look forward to doing it again next week.
Me too, brother. Take care.
For Brent Beard, Travis Schreier, thanking you all for joining us live here on a Wednesday night, second helping, and we'll be back to do it again next week. Keep it locked right here to Schreier on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel. Hit us with a thumbs up if you don't mind. A like would help us out, and we'll talk to you again real soon. So long, everybody.